figures out $32.27.
What's posted?
Otherwise, it costs you $67.
Wow. Are there other books in that?
They're all garbage.
They're all garbage, like no dictionary. Like the stars.
Not that I've seen. I mean, maybe you can give them to somebody. Everybody have both of those? There should be two, the alphabet and another.
Okay, I do have
it. Yeah, you can get the other half. Right? You got both.
Volume condensed down to two little volumes, so the lettering is so small you can't read it. So you get about
90.
Oh, you're
kidding.
And you will read it too.
Whoa.
I think you got good eyesight.
Now, what is that for now?
Okay, this is the it has these two little plastic inserts you can pull out.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Wow. It's really great.
But it's,
Woo!
Yeah, it's just copy off of that. But you see the value of it if you do anything steady on English words, because it makes words just like a finger in the book.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if they did that with all the commentary? It would be on the shelf space.
Yeah.
They do.
They do. On microphone. I mean, that'll find a home somewhere.
Probably right there.
Well, you want to get an example of the value, look at the word Jesus. What it does, it not only gives you the derivations of all the words, but it gives you the earliest occurrence in English language of that particular word, what it occurred in. See all the different forms, traces of the Old English, Middle English, and New English. How far back do we go? As far back as the future of the world. The only other thing like it is the
mention. Speech of KEDPS, etymology.
How did you get
it?
Well, if you want to trace the root, particularly the English word, if you really want to get the most thorough definition of the word in the English language, that's where you go.
But how do we get our own big copy? You got to get a big copy.
A lot of magazines, they have a book every month, but that's one of the come on. You get three choices, you get this, two other choices for 17 choices. So if you bought it regularly, it's 17. And the catch is you got to buy at least three more books. We're going to give you all this junk. You have to buy three more books the first year, and after that you can drop out. And the other three books, if you buy the cheapest three books, it comes out to around $30. So now they got a new thing. They have to ask your permission to before they can pass on your picture and stuff. got into a problem. We're to quit on this. You got three main kingdoms in this period of time. We're talking about you don't need to get this in your notes, but that's probably easier. This has been confirmed that these two are in the same reign, Aragon and Eger. And this is probably the Eger thinking of Abram's great grandfather. Okay, then in Genesis 10, he saw it with his son who was named to vision. Okay, and as it turned out, this Ezra this time controlled everything under him. He reigned for 28 years. He was the sixth king of Ezra. He was the sixth of the sixth. Sargon was 28 of each. Babylon was various. These were all city states. Ezra was a city. Babylon, that's a later terminology, but that general area, lower Mesopotamia Valley, Persia, the upper, where various city-states took over and ruled. Okay. And at the time of Ezra's height under Egypt, he controlled known civilization. Okay. But it was an economic trade. It wasn't a dictator. He was considered a good king. He invoked such laws as tithing, money to orphans and widows, social reforms for the poor, and perhaps he tried to eliminate bureaucracy. And this, even in both of them, in order to do that, both of these two. Now, he was a vassal king under Egypt. Okay. Now, so there was like a period of peace and prosperity and righteousness for that day and age. Okay, this guy comes along and murders this guy and takes over his kingdom. He's getting a lot older in years now. But Sargon defeats this guy and takes over the whole known world. He is the first world conqueror, as per se, for a civilization. Okay, now he is a Semite. Prior to this, these are all, going on back, they're all Sumerian race, S-U-M-E-R-I-E-N, that's the Sumerian tribe.
So they were Jews,
right? These are the Sumerian people I'll talk about in a minute. Sargon, and I'll talk about him in a minute, was probably Nimrod's revival. That's a know, so there's some real good reasons why they think that we didn't see that too much. But anyway, he conquered the king. Now, Pelleg didn't rule. Whoever the king was here under Ephraim, these were elected offices. They weren't. He reigned for 7 years. All right, whoever the king was here, Sargon conquered and made him a vassal. So Sargon controlled Fertile Crescent. He controlled Mesopotamia and Valley all the way to Egypt. Okay, and then there's a lot of writing about his exploits. And the reason I mention that is because this Sargon is the originator of the Akkadian language. Okay, not the originator, but I mean it's through him that it became the known language all the way down through the time of Moses. But it used the written form of the old kingdom of the Sumerian cuneiform writing. Okay. It should the clay tablets that they made into this. Which had over 100 symbols. So that was the written form. And the spoken form was Akkadian. Okay. Now the reason Akkadian is important is because Akkadian eventually became Chaldean. That's what Daniel wrote. Now Chaldean was mistakenly called Chaldean at one time because it was not the language originally of the Chaldean. As it turns out, it's the old Akkadian language with the addition to the different symbols. But it's the same sounding language. And it's really probably the language that was used by Sargon. And it was named after Akkad. The city that he founded as his headquarters. And it's one of two cities that exist that he founded. Now the Bible says Nimrod founded Akkad. Sargon claims that he founded it as a city of his empire. There's another city that he claims that he founded in Genesis 10 that also says Nimrod founded. Third one says Nimrod founded was Babylon, and he hasn't mentioned Babylon. I'm sure the reason is that the confusion is coming. If it was a supernatural event at one time, occurred. And so he was the 28th king of Kish, which is transliterated from Kush. So they think that the Kush founded that city after the flood, and then the 28th king from that city ruled that whole area, and it was Nimrod. It started on the first, for sure, and possibly Nimrod. At the same time, Ebla had gone through a series of five kings. Various ones of rule, multiple for 7 years, and Ephraim was on the throne there. So it fills in a big gap that confirms where Sargon was at that time. Now, the dating of all this is, you know, another whole story. But, you know, they dated back in, even the scholars can't do, even using the carbon dating and the pottery for so long, so they don't know what. But that's not important. It's the fact that he originated the Akkadian language. And the word Akkad means one, and it's through the German Gott, is our word Gott, so it means one. And he was trying to bring, apparently, you know, all the talk about trying to bring all people together under one language. Okay. So maybe that has some significance in the fact that we need to do that. It's the first letter of Hebrew alphabet. The language did spread, the superseded the Sumerian language, and it did spread all over the Fertile Crescent, but didn't it was Sargon. What really caused it to break up the most was the invention of the alphabet. Of course, what? The Akkadian language. It, over a period of time, right after that, and all scholars agree, the alphabet didn't originate over a long period of time. They credit one genius with inventing the alphabet. In Uterus or Phoenicia in that area there, inventing the alphabet to use the computer science rather than using the equipment as a means at one point in time over a period of time. Because the alphabet is completely dispersed in language at all. So it's just a possibility. The prior to that, you had the cuneiform symbols, where you had symbols that stood for mostly for words or for sounds, but not letters. You didn't have particular letters. So with the invention of letters, you get consonants, you get down to 30 to 100, and then the language just went like that. So it's a little bit of history background in there. Anyway, where Aramaic is in there, it's a good guess. I bet.
Yeah, one question.
Okay. You mentioned the fact that the script which developed basically what we know as modern Hebrew is a Canaanite script, correct? And so it was the Akkadian was maybe the forerunner of ancient Hebrew. Is that true?
No.
Or is it a different?
No. Well, see, it hasn't been resolved. Ebla existed before Akkadian.
Oh, okay.
The Sumerian people, the script that the Sumerians used was about, Ebla was its own language, but the scribes could use both Sumerian and Ebla parallel. So they have alphabetic lists both of them together. So those are the two oldest languages, other than sign language, called pictograph language, which the ancient Sumerians, not the Sumerians that used the cuneiform, but when you were still in the cave type thing and you had pictures, it's very similar to the Egyptian hieroglyphics that they found on the cave, and they had over 2,000 symbols. They actually had a language, but it had over 2,000 symbols. So the Sumerians made a major breakthrough, and they got it down to 100 symbols, and then the cuneiform, the clay, became more flexible than the Egyptian form hieroglyphics. And what I think is you had Ebla in the middle, and you had, you can see it on the map, Ebla was almost halfway between the two, and probably the interplay with Ebla and Egypt produced the opposite of that area. Or, if not the alphabet, at least the Phoenician alphabet, which is what is in it. It is real similar, and I'm going to hand it over in a second. But these two together were cuneiform, remember, so there wasn't any advancement in the language until the Akkadians, which actually didn't advance the language, made it more backwards. The Sumerian language is more advanced than the Akkadian language. When the Akkadian language took over, it swept the other way and became the main official language all the way down to the time of Moses. It went down to the Moses, which he could have written. He could have written Egyptian too. Of course, they were in the Old East, they don't have a long time. Probably.
So that's when you're away from the cuneiform.
Pardon?
Is that thing when you pretty much came away from the cuneiform?
No, it's still, the Akkadian was spoken in the cuneiform script. So you have, you have the same basic language as far as writing goes, as far as spoken in the Akkadian. And, but the clay tablet, they could have, the clay tablet, that should be with a paper, would have done a parchment, a fire, and things, the same symbols, but like, so, the Akkadian then, then the old Assyrian, which is probably a descendant of the of Ebla, old Assyrian, combining with the alphabet somehow here, probably before you got Aramaic. So you've got Ebla and probably Ugarit by this time. And somewhere after that you have, as a result of that, you have Aramaic. And Aramaic has an alphabet. Falls in different categories as Ebla and Sumerian script. Okay, but Aramaic was what Abraham was familiar with when he was in the land. So that's the language he would use in Aramaic. actually, in the Assyrian Empire, they made it their official language because it was much easier to communicate rather than to communicate on script. So they made that official, and then when battle class and everything and so forth superseded them, they were Chaldeans. They reinstituted the old Akkadian. They didn't use their and apparently the Chaldeans are mystery people that just came out of the mountains somewhere. They first showed up around 1000 BC, and they were the most adept culture for black art. So you got some amazing parallels. But see, that is, you know, the liberal kind of field day with that one, of course. But then how you can resolve that one simply by moving away with that for a position story. So, Moses, there's nothing to say that, you know, Moses' mother didn't know that account. And that was a good idea to her, but that's what she did. Yeah, so just, what about? They had Akkadian, they had all the folklore, and they had all the tales and everything else. But anyway,
what's your source for Sargon?
Everything I can say together, but there's a lot of, part of the reason this is one of the numbers that you do is that the number of times is times the number of 700 years. Verse 7. But then his Griff became the father of Nimrod. Well, it doesn't list him right in the son, right as directly as his son. So there's a good chance what that means is that Nimrod came through that lineage, not necessarily that he was his father, maybe his great grandfather. Okay, well, that would fit in with him being the 28th king from Cush, city of Cush. It could, you know, just fit in there. Also, it's really interesting here on the beginning of this kingdom is Babel, Eric, Akkad, and Kalmus in the land of China. Okay, he. Sargon is credited with building Erech, Akkad, and probably Kalmus, as well as some of them, a bunch of other cities in Assyria that he went into right after. But it doesn't mention Babel. And Nimrod, the name Nimrod, is there right from the city of Kish, right there, there's a city that's called Marad, M-A-R-A-D. And Nimrod may have been a local name, Nim meaning Lord, and Marad was Lord of Marad, or Nimrod. So, okay, then in chapter 11, it showed you that verse 5. Verse 9, the name of the called Babel, where they were scattered. Well, it says Nimrod founded Babel. It doesn't really say that, but it's at the beginning of the kingdom. But it probably implications for the building. And that's still going to be a parallel right here. Also, it may give a little significance to why parts of Daniel, particularly the judgment, everything in this are dating, go all the way back to Nimrod, like the judgment of Nimrod and all the people. The handout, the copy. The other reason why I started on is there's never been anyone. All the empires have had a death. He united the religious, the political, and the economic. But he had it all together, and he set the pattern for every world empire from that time on. Now, there could have been something that existed before of that nature, but as far as archaeology goes, he was the first world empire. And first established one language and one culture. Language is broken up, the culture is just scaled with the form of it and start on. So, also, he wasn't, now it says in here he was from, Nimrod was from Ham, not from Shem, but Shemites were, the Akkadians were Shemites, the Sargons, it doesn't rule that, was one of the main reasons why people ruled him out of King Nimrod. But it says he didn't know who his father was. His mother was, of course, a prostitute. And so it doesn't make him a semi necessarily, because he could have been, his father could have been a Sumerian, or any of the other, there's a lot of races down there. What's interesting, Sumerians were apparently, they either were black-headed or a black race. They changed themselves, they called themselves a black-headed people. And all the Semites were very good. For that's the most important thing to be black hair versus white hair. That was a candy game for the black hair. Anyway,
is there any way that we can get, I'm sure we're just confused with all these different branches and all this stuff. Is there any way we can, I don't know if one of these charts could give us information, but so we could see it step by step.
Part of the problem is if you're reading different, like you have to stick in real time. Words like, the interpreters and archaeological digests and others, some of them are archaeologists. But the problem is some of them use Aramaic, one type they mean. But they're also closely related to say, it's real confusing. I think it's a third of a little bit of this chart of the alphabet. It doesn't include everything, but it shows it's just a derivation of the Hebrew and Greek alphabet. This is from the New Bible version, section on writing. And on the left of the Egyptian hieroglyphs, right next to it, the Sinaitic hieroglyphs. It's actually just been discovered just about in the area where it's not all this confused and it's dated to about 1500 BC, about the same time. So it's interesting. There's a third version there. The Canaanite pseudo hieroglyphs there. The real early Ugaritic form, and it shows a similarity with the Egyptian. And then if you jump over to the Sicily Arab and Arabian, and then go over to the Phoenician, 1000 BC, that's about, and then early Hebrew, they're almost identical. And then the next column over, which is early Hebrew, 710 BC, that's what they say on the Siloam pool or wall, or what they found it there. And then the Lakish letters, which were just, I believe that was where there was communication between Jerusalem and Lakish concerning the sea. Okay, this is the evidence. I showed it kind of alphabet, but it's 150 years later. This, okay, then you jump over and get to the Aramaic Elephantine, 4th century BC. This was discovered in a town of Dresden, buried under the Aswan Dam. But it's apparently where the Jews fled with Jeremiah, that area. And it talks about an elaborate. But that's not one of the dragons they found roll after roll after roll. It's communication with the reestablished kingdom of Judah. And they're talking about permission to build a temple. They get permission provided if they don't have any animal worship. That's kind of the reason for the animal worship in their history. It's real elaborate. But the fact that they communicated back and forth shows that this script was easily understandable and it was probably. I guess it was probably whatever you use. If not, he used the one in the next column, which is modern Hebrew. He could have used modern Hebrew. It goes back to the 2nd century AD in the Dead Sea Scrolls. If he didn't, if he used the column before it, then this probably evolved, and the only difference is that some of the letters have changed. After looking it over, the letters that are changed are ones that could be confused with other letters. So all they do is change the letters that are being confused with another letter. Okay, so this shows that the four letters as we know it in existence, at least by the 2nd century, which they used to think of the Masoretic at all. Okay, then where I've got those numbers in the middle there, the one on the top and the one on the bottom, and two threes and two twos. Those three letters were the ones that Ginsberg made a case for that were most frequently transposed. In other words, the one on the top was mistaken with the tau at the bottom, and vice versa. And by tracing them back, we discovered that he corrected a lot of errors. Different, but if you look at these letters, you could see and substitute the other letter down the bottom in the harmony. And I don't know how much value there is, you know, it's really easy to go over the other direction. And the only thing is, if somebody was doing a real detailed study on the verse, you check that to see if it's different. If it is different, check some of the critical commentary. But after, I went through all 30 of the disasters we gave, and we're all through that. And it is, some of them, trying to remote them into proper okay, then this other page right here is kind of a condensed condensation of the Hebrew language. And Thunder has a way of putting it very simply. But the only thing it doesn't have on there is it doesn't discuss the elephants in the sky. But if you go down, you may want to mark this down where it says, the middle of column two with the origin. Where it says Sarabadel, Caden, and the Sinai Peninsula. That corresponds to the second column on the other page, which is Sinai Peninsula. And further down, about another 2 inches down, it says Sarcophagus of Hiram of Biblos. That is the Phoenician 1000 BC on the other one. And then on the bottom line, you get Siloam and Scripture, that corresponds to the early Hebrew first column of the Siloam. And right up at the top, you get Life and Letters, which is the next column. It doesn't give you all the same entirety. Okay, so that's a, if you read that article, I think it kind of explains it a little bit clearer than I might not know. The only thing is any questions about it? Abraham was undoubtedly a caravan too. He wasn't a shepherd. He was undoubtedly a very wealthy caravan. And that's just that whole system of trade that was started with it. Not started, but he brought the pull on the Ephraim. Undoubtedly, Abraham was traveling to this place. He would have a probably that's what he's saying. Okay, I want to just give a little bit on the profile of it. There's a place particularly up over some of the versions will pick up and they'll take the other course with another technical one course. And that's one way that the version can help sometimes they work in a different way than we do. In fact, check the commentary and see if they show the another text or that whole the Old Testament translation probably picks up a lot of that too. Okay, Ezra, probably rewrote, I think, everything into the English text under inspiration. There's a lot of work, undoubtedly. He could have possibly done it all. There's a lot of pride under him. So obviously, the parts that he, the book that he wrote, and other places that he, they speculate that he added into because of similarity of style and Ezra, which is in there, which is down. But there is a possibility, and it would accommodate a lot of liberal theories as well, as the CR, is that granted he had a later form of Aramaic and he had a little different style, but if the Lord wanted to convert everything, language, there would be changes, not changes in meaning or spelling necessarily, but just updated language. And so that would bring the rewriting of the Catholic history, if they're not necessarily written, so they take that and go, look, everything was oral down to this point, and then they're going to start to go down. Well, they've already established that Moses probably used at least five languages, that the common Hebrew slave who write. So that's completely without foundation, but the Bible says it works out. But what he probably did is add in change, and it also accommodated for why, like they try, liberal science tells you that, you know, change represents the idea, time will represent life, and all that. Well, that's possible, but it's just like you got the gospel harmony, he's possibly harmonizing sonic old. Well, that would have to be another inspiration in terms of how you arrange the text, the information would have to be inspired. Change, not changing the wording, changing what's said, but just changing the format of how it's presented. And that makes something like Chronicles on the Glass. That's all speculation, and we can think so throughout. But undoubtedly, he had to have done a tremendous amount of work to get it into a form of a square letter. Somewhere got into square letters. Square letters, the tradition is that the square letters came with Ezra, about the use of Hebrew, that's pretty much all that. But now they've shown it was always active. Second, third thing to do, too, and there's never even been a thing could have done. Back in Daniel and the others, and the people went out of terms of polish the language up in Babylon. So whenever they came back to the other thing, it's difficult to learn how to do it in Babylon. If that's the case, you have a transcript from the hometown, so the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. So that's the hangout for the life of the town. He founded the synagogue to read the law of the people. The fact that another reason why he probably had to change the he's writing in Aramaic, but he's kind of official Aramaic, the language of the Persian Empire, which is a little bit different form than what Abraham had, but remember what Abraham had combined with the Phoenician became Old Hebrew. Okay. If that died out, except for the Samaritan, And when Ezra, the Aramaic that existed in Babylon, it became the official language of both the Assyrian Empire and the Persian Empire, but not Nebuchadnezzar. They were Chaldean, but used the Akkadian. So the Akkadian was square letters, but Daniel wrote in whatever they were. So slightly different from the Aramaic. Very little different. And now the Aramaic now is what we know as physical being.
So it was the Akkadian, what you're talking about is the Akkadian written in the script that we know. Right, so you're talking about a transliterate, the spoken Akkadian in the written, what we would call Hebrew.
Right, instead of in the old Finnish form, that was before. In a written form of letters, probably four letters or something very close to it. And the difference, it may be a little bit of difference, but anyway, you can tell the difference in anybody that thinks Hebrew. Some of Hebrew is not like this. But naming and ending, the pronouns, a little bit of a verb structure, and more of a style than it is real different. More like that. Middle English, Middle English. And because they wrote in the script, but yet the spoken language was a thousand and more than a thousand. And before that, the Syrian Empire used Aramaic. That was the official language. It's called official Aramaic. Official Aramaic is what the people spoke that were translated into Palestine into the Middle Persian. You have official Aramaic there, and official Aramaic until Nebuchadnezzar takes over, then you have Akkadian, and then when Cyrus takes over, you have official Aramaic. So, in the Bible, really, it's been the only Aramaic script with the square letters. That seems to be the original. And the old Hebrew, which is the original Hebrew, the original Hebrew, that died out except for Samaritan. And the fact that it was different enough that people could understand it was for everyone to read a lot of people. So that was the beginning of the synagogue system, where they read the law to the people. And we started that. To establish a scribe guild. Superseded the priest, but because the priest was in so direct, and he was a priest too. But later, the priest was in so direct, it was tragic to go to the law. After him, we had the, shortly after him, probably within 100 years, we had the Hasidim, H-A-I-S-I-D-I-N. For the ones who are taking names from that. Those are the guys, Bill Rogers, and then going to New York Marathon, he said, I don't know what he founded the basis of oral law, which eventually codified in Mishnah. They went way beyond what God required. They didn't know how to pronounce the name of the manuscript. They probably made the first notation on the text together with the sophron that they became known under the sophron, you know, with the counters. Scribes, it's all really vague for scribes. You need sophron, kind of a terminology that describes the second meaning of the God. So they gave way to the Masoretic. So he made change in the divine name to a different pronoun, and there's 18 emendations that the Sophron credits in him. E-M-A-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S emendations. There's 18 changes in the fact that the Sophron admits that they made, but they ascribe them to others. So they just perpetuated the change. And we'll look at those. Was the main leader. therapy and sex are not being fully done.
Where it goes to. How expensive is microfilm?
Sorry?
How expensive is microfilm?
It's really a lot cheaper than paying to go out and buy it.
They have, how many works do they have then?
We have that one in here. Yeah, it's a lot cheaper just from a little complex. Better be on for a small space.
Can I keep working here or not?
Sure.
Is there going to be a class in here this hour?
No, no class in here. I don't know what it is. It's 3-5-6 on here as well, but it's kind of meeting here.
Yeah, it is.
You might want to have an operation.
Oh, you know what?
What?
Okay, good idea. We should get a podium in there.
I wonder if there's one podium
around
in any room.
Yeah, they told me if I wanted one. I'm going to have one for this next year.
Really?
Yeah.